Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Workers' Party's position on the formal recognition of the State of Palestine is clear in our manifesto, the same manifesto we took to voters before the elections. That has not changed. I note the earlier remarks by Minister going through what had happened in the past. 37 years ago, Singapore formally welcomed the establishment of the announcement or the proclamation of a State of Palestine. And an important trigger for that was the explicit recognition by Yasser Arafat that the PLO would reject terrorism. Similarly, at the New York, with regard to the New York Declaration, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs also welcomed the Palestinian Authority's continued rejection of violence and terrorism. With that as a preamble, does the minister not agree that the prospects of having an effective Palestinian government in place, which is a precondition to Singapore recognizing the State of Palestine, is not a realistic precondition anymore, given the statement of the Israeli Prime Minister that there will not be a Palestinian state, and one can assume that he will work overtime to make sure that does not happen? And that is separate to the signing of an expanded settlement agreement that would bisect the occupied West Bank. Secondly, does the minister not agree that with many of our major trade and defence partners like France, Australia, UK and our ASEAN neighbours, and the overwhelming majority of the international community of nations recognising the State of Palestine, does our foreign policy position not risk being seen as anachronistic? And in this regard, what specific principles are we upholding by not recognising the State of Palestine forthwith? Shouldn't recognising the State of Palestine be in our national interests and more weight placed instead of on Israel's flagrant violations of international law and commitment to continue doing the same? Would not doing so send a clear message that as a matter of clear principle, Singapore's foreign policy stands for the foundational role of the UN in maintaining peace and security and does not stand for breaches of international law, particularly in view of the government's public comments on UNSC Resolution 242 and separately 2334? The third question pertains to the government and the SAF's extensive military-to-military links with the State of Israel. Most recent example of this being the joint development of a surface-to-surface missile Blue Spear by Singapore Technologies and the Israel Aerospace Industries. Has the government, and this was a part of my parliamentary question, has the government reviewed whether close ties with Israel, particularly in the military domain going forward, continue to be in our national interests? And has the government assessed whether Singapore is relatively over-invested in the Israel-Singapore relationship? And is it not time to diversify in our national interests? Minister spoke of sanctions and announced that this more details would be announced later. Do the sanctions that the minister is foreseeing have any impact on current military-to-military relationship with Israel? My last question is to the Senior Minister of State for Home Affairs. What is the current threat assessment to Singapore and Singapore interests arising from a perception of close Singapore-Israel ties from radicalised individuals abroad and self-radicalised individuals locally? And does the government see a direct link between threats to Singapore and given close Singapore-Israel ties in the immediate to medium term? Thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Speaker.
Minister Balakrishnan.
First question, is our requirement that there be an effective political entity or government on the other side a realistic one? And the Leader of Opposition adds on to say, well, Israel will do its best to make sure that there's no realistic government. and therefore by insisting on having an effective government as an objective reality, are we setting the bar too high? Well, Mr. Speaker, that's why I took some pains in my statement to go through the history of the Palestinian Authority and the very difficult journey to get both sides to accept a two-state solution. I reminded you the two-state solution didn't begin yesterday. In fact, it goes back to the UN in 1947. Israel took what was on offer, ran, declared independence. The entire constellation of Arab countries said no, there'll be one state. You had war. And it is only in 1988 that the Palestinian Liberation Organization, in its proclamation of a Palestinian state, even then only implicitly recognized Israel's right to exist and renounce terrorism. And we welcome that proclamation because these two elements, recognizing the other exists and renouncing terrorism, is important for our national interest. It's not just a foreign policy issue. It's in our national interest. I also then went on to describe the events, Oslo, the elections in Gaza, the two decades without election, the violence between Hamas and Fatah, again to point out the lack of an objective reality is not all on due to one other party. They've got to get their own house in order. Will we allow, however, Israel therefore to have a veto? And the answer is we cannot allow them to have a veto because our consistent, long-held belief is a two-state solution. And if either one or both says no, well, we can't go along with them on that right. And that's why I have also caveated that our position is not if, but when. And we have also highlighted that if the situation continues to deteriorate or if Israel takes further action to extinguish any prospect for a two-state solution, then we have to reconsider our position. And then you asked whether we are being anachronistic because several, basically European powers in the last few days have changed position. And in my answer to Mr. Vikram Nair, I tried to remind everyone that actually, on the big picture, we all want the same thing. But that different countries will have different thresholds, different triggers to decide when they take certain diplomatic moves. We, for now, have shifted since May last year, and we said we are prepared in principle to recognize the Palestinian state. Today, I'm telling you, we will recognize the Palestinian state. When? Effective government, renouncing terrorism, recognizing the state of Israel. It is a shift, but it is also a shift, which I want to emphasize, recognizes, it puts some, you have to clear a certain bar. That amongst the Palestinians themselves, they have sorted out themselves politically to be an effective, unified voice that can conduct foreign policy, that can enter into agreements and make agreements stick. And also because of our aversion, our complete aversion to terrorism. So that's why we have taken the current position. So I don't think we are being anachronistic. I think we are being realistic, given the circumstances in which Singapore has to operate in our part of the world. On defence, I have already said that, yes, it is not a secret that they played a role in our early years, for which we are grateful, and they continue to have an invaluable role. But again, that does not mean that we are locked into giving them a free pass. When you have an equal and mutually respectful partnership, when you defer, you must be prepared to say so, openly, candidly, and constructively. And we have that kind of relationship. I will not get into operational details of defence. You know that it is the government's established long-standing policy not to publicly divulge details of defence cooperation for national security reasons. So I'm not going to go into that area, but I give you this assurance, we are not being held hostage. Singapore will not allow itself to be held hostage. Beyond that, I'm not going to get into operational details. And as an NS man yourself, I'm sure you understand that.
Dr. Charlene Chen. Sorry, Acting Minister Pers, Pasha Ibrahim.
Thank the LO for the supplementary question or clarification. If you look at the issue of radicalization, there are many factors that account for it. And also, there are also many incidents around the world that's happening, as well as not only about the incidents, also relating to what our young people and Singaporeans come across at social media and also what they read. And so I can say that we are very fortunate to have not only enforcement agencies that really look at how we can minimize or eradicate, if possible, the issue of radicalization. But we have community partners that work together with us to go upstream and look at how we can manage this and help our people in promoting a harmonious and peaceful living here. So I try to think what the leader of opposition is suggesting when he asked that question. Is he suggesting that that our policy stance has resulted in radicalization? So I just want to get his answer to that.
Mr. Singh.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not suggesting that. My query to the senior minister of state pertains to the threat landscape and the environment. And the question is not something new. In 2013, I shared with this House that there's a concern if Singapore's position may have an impact on the way people think about this particular issue if we are seen as too close to the Israeli position. Is there any evidence that MHA has that the close relationship contributes to a heightened environment of radicalization faced by Singapore? I think that's the point. Because we have had episodes in the past, and the MHA have announced it, where certain individuals are held under ISA, and they cite this issue as one reason for their thoughts and actions insofar as planning violence in Singapore.
Mr. Pasha.
I thank the member for clarifying. So what is key is that in the security agencies, we look at all the different areas. Certain things may have an effect or perceived effect. Nevertheless, in Singapore, if you have, I'm sure you're familiar as how we build our nation, what we do, we understand there are various things that affect how a person thinks, how that will invoke emotion. What we do, we work with community partners, agencies, and even if you read at what the religious rehabilitation group they are doing, is that they not only look at the Malay Muslim issues, but they look at how they can play a part in building a peaceful, harmonious, and progressive Singapore. So at the end of the day, looking at the Singapore's interests, linking back to what Minister Vivian has said earlier. So I want to reiterate back that issue of radicalization comes from various factors. And also, if you look at the profile of the different individuals who have been so-called radicalized or being in the early stage or even the advanced stage of radicalization, there are various factors that account for that. So to pin down to just the policy stance, I think it will not be accurate. And I think that I'm happy that the LO has clarified his position in this.